Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Go, Matt Harmon here with you, and you are listening to Reception Perception, the show. Matt, how are you doing today, pal?
Doing good, man. You know, we've got our rookie content drop. We're going to be starting on April 3rd, so prospects will start hitting the site then. And, you know, going after that, it's just like kind of trying to round up some more smaller sample guys in the class. So right now I'm just trying to hunt down as much film as I can and get these rookies banged out here for the good subscribers of Reception Perception.
I mean, we're going to sound like total, you know, old heads here, but it is kind of amazing, right? Like the amount of footage and available film that's, you know, that's on the internet for these guys. You know what I mean? It used to be a really specialized thing, man. Like you couldn't find game tape, all 22 game tape on none of these dudes. And now I just feel like it's everywhere.
Yeah. And you know, you got to do some digging sometimes. Sometimes it's easier to find, you know, certain publicly available sources or stuff like that. But, you know, no need to out anybody on what's essentially like the weirdest internet black market of all time, probably the weirdest but tamest. But the NCAA takes everything so seriously. Black market of all time, which is college football, all 22, which is so much harder to get than the NFL. So yeah, nobody cares about that, but I think they will care about the results of these rookies. It's a really, we're going to talk about it more so obviously on our next episode when the content drop happens, but it's a very interesting class as a whole for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So we will tease ahead. We'll talk about this kid out of North Carolina, Josh Downs, in today's episode, but we'll get to him in just a bit. Kind of wanted to start the show here. You know, listen, the football news is slowing down just a little bit here, Matt. And I think the biggest headline, of course, resides there in Baltimore. What is going on with Lamar Jackson, man? And to be honest with you, I feel like Baltimore is really fumbling this thing. You know, it's like, I feel like I know that they could stand back and say, ah, well, you know, hey, listen, Lamar can't go anywhere. He could just continue to play on and he doesn't really have too many options, which is true, which is why, again, the system is very tilted in favor of the teams and against the players. Lamar Jackson let it be known that, that hey, he's requested a trade. Didn't really get out because he doesn't have an agent. And normally an agent would be doing these type of things, but he didn't let it out. And the team certainly didn't let it be known. But now Lamar just, he's like, all right, enough is enough. Okay, I requested a trade, and let's get the ball rolling here a little bit. And again, Matt, when I say, hey, listen, Baltimore's fumbled this in a number of different ways. Part of it too is, why not just load up the offense for Lamar, right? You've seen other teams do this, right? No, they had an opportunity. They could try to overpay and try to go get like an Odell. They could overpay and try to go get Nuke Hopkins. They could overpay, try to get, you know, even the best, you know, guy on the market there was Jacoby Myers. No. They go and get Nelson Agholor. Come on, bro. Like what? God, Baltimore, what are we doing out here, man? Like it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this whole Lamar Jackson thing?
Well, first of all, yeah, the Nelson Agholor signing was hilarious because it's just like the most Ravens wide receiver signing ever. Like, are you on your third, fourth, or fifth team? Perfect. Is your best season? Down. Is your best season a distant memory? Come on in. Oh wait, you're one good sneeze away from your 30s, buddy. You are a Baltimore Raven. That is just so true. I mean, if you look at like they've brought in. I saw Ian Harditz tweeted this out. Like notable Ravens wide receiver free agent signing since 2018,
so bad.
And their age at signing. DeSean Jackson's 35. Dez Bryant, 31. And he was playing like he was 41 at that point. Michael Floyd, 30. Totally forgot Michael Floyd ever played for Baltimore Ravens. Floyd,
wow.
Michael Crabtree, 30. Sammy Watkins, two times, 29 and 27. Seth Roberts, oh boy, 28 years old.
Boy.
John Brown, hey, that was a good one.
Hey,
no disrespect. I love John Brown, and he actually was pretty good. He was actually like on a pace. He was on pace for 1,000 yards when Joe Flacco was playing in 2018. And then like Chris Moore, DeMarcus Robinson, Willie Snead. So yeah, a bunch of dudes that are either not that good or are on the back nine of their career. Like literally John Brown, I think, is the only one that was like, all right, he's like kind of in the prime of his career, second team. But even he was coming off a lot of like injuries and sickle cell stuff in Arizona. So yeah, they've never made like that was kind of why I liked Jacoby Myers for them, just because they've never made a signing of a guy who's like right about to kind of maybe ascend. It's always these guys like Nelson Aguilar, and that's like, it was just a hilarious parody of that idea. But I mean, they're a little bit hamstrung right now just because they have Lamar on this like theoretical non-exclusive 30 plus million franchise tag number, like sitting on their cap. But I mean, if they could negotiate a long-term deal with him, they could bring down that cap number and maybe bring in Nuke Hopkins, maybe bring in Odell Beckham, but they're just kind of stuck in this space. And yeah, Lamar requests a trade, but he was already available to everybody. Like anybody can negotiate with Lamar. So, and yeah, it's funny that this is a guy who's a former MVP, you know, quarterback in the middle of his career. And he requested a trade on March 2nd. It's March 28th as we're recording this, and we're just finding this out. I mean, that would only happen because he's representing himself. But I mean, it's just a weird situation. But to me, I still think that this is either going to end one of two ways. Like either he's going to just tail between his legs, go back to the Ravens and sign whatever contract they want. I mean, which by the way, I'm sure they've offered him something pretty reasonable. It's just weird. We don't really know, but he's either going to have to take a deal with the Ravens, or he's going to have to play on the franchise tag, which is, I mean, crazy, but I don't know. I just don't see a lot of actual real resolutions to this, as fun as they might be. I kind of understand. We'll talk about these specific teams, but I kind of understand why no team wants to do the contract work for the Ravens essentially.
Well, yeah, I understand that part. But at the same time, it's like I get the draft capital going out too is pretty significant. Okay, now that being said, all of these quote-unquote football reasons that these teams are making up is just utter BS. And I think that's probably what sticks in my craw the most, right? It's like, listen, man, if you want to say you don't want to pay a fully guaranteed contract, fine. You want to say, I don't want to give up first round draft capital, multiple first round picks? Fine. Don't sit here and tell me that, like, for example, Arthur Smith just came out. Oh, we really like Ritter's makeup. Stop it. Just stop it, man. Like, how many games did it take for Desmond Ritter to get on the field?
Too many.
A lot of games. You know what I mean? Like
too many Marcus Mariota games last year.
Come on, bro. Like, stop it. So Washington saying they like Sam Howell. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if they like Sam Howell, because when you say we think Sam Howell could be as good as Brock Purdy, oh my God. That is like the most underhanded compliment that you could give somebody. We hope that our starting quarterback is as good as the last pick of the draft. That's what we're hoping for. We hope that he can be as good as Brock Purdy. Like, guys, what are we talking? I mean, Washington with Lamar would be interesting as all get out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've got the playmakers all over the field. That's why I was saying I thought Aaron Rodgers should have gone there. But I mean, stop making up these like football related reasons as to why you don't like a former MVP in the prime of his career. Stop it.
They are one team, Washington. I think in terms of teams that could potentially make a move, I think the Colts could make a move. They've also not ruled it out. Jim Irsay said, I'm not doing no guaranteed contracts.
Like, yeah,
right. That's bad for the sport, which we could argue that till the cows come home, but there's just no point. Like, the owners don't want to do the guaranteed contract. Only one owner wanted to do the guaranteed contract, Jimmy Haslam, during the Deshaun Watson stuff, and that was because he was desperate. Like, I think that's what people forget was the Browns were out of the Deshaun Watson thing, and I know there's all, like, very legitimate reasons that was gross all the way around to begin with.
Yeah.
But the Browns had been told, and it was public, that they were out. They were out of the Deshaun Watson stuff. And we know that was true because Watson has a powerful agent who will leak to the media no problem. So any sort of discussion otherwise is ridiculous. But so it was like between the Falcons, I think the Saints, the Panthers, basically. Maybe I'm misremembering. But regardless, the Browns are out. And then the Browns said, we will give you the fully guaranteed $200+ million contract. And that is why Deshaun Watson became a Brown. And that was really where this whole Lamar Jackson thing starts, because Steve Bisciotti said right afterwards, like, that's going to make things tough when it comes to our guy, which Baltimore should have just got the deal done when, like, Josh Allen signed his new deal with the Bills, because they're from the same draft class. So they waited too long to do it. It's always a bad idea if you wait too long. Like, the second your quarterback is eligible, you should extend him, because that deal is going to age well. But I say all that to say that it's just been a long, complicated, winding process. I think it's going to continue to be a long, complicated process. But Washington is interesting to me, James, because we found out today that there's two fully funded offers in to buy the team. Adam Schefter reported that they've got two offers. So if this thing sells, if Washington sells and they have they have a new owner, Dan Snyder's out, I could see the new ownership group saying to, you know, their football people, because this is an owner level decision if you're going to make this move, say, 100%. Hey, you know what? We will go try to pry Lamar Jackson and give up two first round picks and make a big splash and just be that finishing touch. I could see that, but again, that's so pie in the sky and so many things have to fall right. But I take your point that that would be a very fun spot for Lamar Jackson. And because of the new ownership stuff, that's the one team that I kind of squint at and say, I could see some, you know, big fat cat billionaire wanting to make a big splash right away, owning the Washington Commanders, getting them really excited, the fans and everything. And that would certainly do it.
Yeah, that would be great. And like I said, it would rejuvenate the fan base. It would get butts in the seat. I mean, if you want to jack up ticket prices to kind of, you know, ease that sale price, a best way to do that is to say, hey, we got a title contender right here, right now. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I think Lamar Jackson, you parachute in Lamar Jackson on that team. Yes. They are in the NFC.
In the NFC. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bruh. Yes. They are automatically in the running for the Super Bowl for sure. 100%. No doubt in my mind.
Yep. I think they're, it is kind of tough because I think the two of the three best teams in the NFC are in the NFC East right now, as weird as that is to say, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. I don't think they'd be better than Philadelphia with Lamar Jackson, but I could hear a conversation that maybe they're better than the Cowboys. And I love the Cowboys roster. I think the Cowboys roster is really, really good. I love the Brandon Cooks trade. Love everything they've done this offseason, but I could see if you plop Lamar Jackson with Eric Bieniemy running that offense now with Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel really Brian Robinson. I like as a running back. I think they have some pieces on the 100%. Offensive line. They could put up a lot of points, but again, it just does feel that, like, whatever contract Lamar gets offered, you know, whether it's, you know, 50 to 60 to 70% guaranteed at signing, like, the Ravens are just going to match it. And he'll just, like, that's the thing that's tough, is he's not really available for trade, because I think Brad Spiegler from Pro Football Focus write that you can't actually trade for more you can't trade him for more compensation than the two first round picks on the franchise, non-exclusive franchise tag. So that's just tough. It's just really, Lamar's in a tough spot because of this franchise tag situation.
Well, let me ask you this though. This is where it gets really interesting. As you mentioned, like, let's say fun billionaire comes in and saves Washington, right? And they're like, all right, we'll give him a fully guaranteed contract. Does Baltimore then say, all right, fine, we'll we'll go ahead and match a fully guaranteed. I don't know. I don't necessarily know if Bisciotti would do that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and it would kind of suck if it was Washington that ends up giving you two first round picks, because Washington has been stuck in this purgatory where they can't, they don't suck enough to be in like
exactly
the top five. They'd get the 16th overall pick, and it's like, well, we're certainly not getting any quarterbacks in this year's draft. So that would kind of suck if that ends up being the team.
You're getting a mid round, first round pick for this, you know, upcoming draft. And then again, you plop, you know, Lamar Jackson. So now you're going to get a low first round. Your second pick is going to be a low first round pick. Right. So again, if you're Washington, I think that's ideal for you. If you go ahead and sign up to a fully guaranteed contract, because yeah, you're giving up two firsts, but it's like, what's the value of those two firsts? You know what I mean? It's like, you're not giving up, you know, top five draft capital here at any point, which is great. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it would be awesome. I just like, man, I just don't want to get too excited about anything with Lamar, because I actually think what this is going to be is like, it's going to drag into August, and it's going to be really, really ugly and really, really tedious. Yeah, frankly, it's already kind of tedious, but yeah, I guess in the multiverse where Lamar Jackson's suiting up for the Commanders and new owners, man, I grew up around that area. I've been to many Washington games in my youth, and I mean, my come up to football was, you know, watching Jason Campbell dump off passes to Mike Sellers for like Joe Gibbs's second run around. And that would be a hell of a thing for the Commanders fans that I know, the tortured among them, to suddenly look at that team and say, not only are we rid of Dan Snyder, we also have Lamar Jackson and all these guys. That would be pretty sick. But James, honestly, we're really burying the news. The biggest Ravens news of the week. You missed it, I guess. But John Harbaugh, you know, right before Lamar Jackson gets out there and, you know, tries to dunk on him through the, you know, or get him on the hot seat with the tweet thread. John Harbaugh let us know that Rashad Bateman, quote, is going to have a big season.
That's right.
I'm a big believer in Rashad Bateman. Good. He's going to come back ready to roll. So that was great. That was funny too. Like, the social team only clipped that one, I noticed, for the Ravens. They clipped the Rashad Bateman thing. They didn't do any Lamar Jackson stuff. Or maybe they did. I don't know. But, you know,
I don't know. This whole Michael Thomas thing about, like, you know, you hear about him not being 100% after the toe surgery. And we've seen his career obviously get, you know, completely derailed here over the last few seasons. I don't know. What is your confidence level? And I know neither one of us are medical, you know, experts or whatever. But what's your confidence level here in Rashad Bateman, man? I'm a little worried that we may never see that dominant X receiver that we saw coming out of school.
God, I know. And I'm going to be so upset if that's the case, because he just checked so many boxes. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I've mentioned it on the show. Maybe I haven't, but you know, I've been working on a project for Reception Perception where, after I get all these rookie profiles up, I'm going to be putting together a rankings for, you know, the last three draft classes combined, what I thought of these guys as prospects. Bateman right now is my eighth overall guy from the last three draft classes. Like, that's how high I was on Rashad Bateman. And, man, I mean, it would be a real shame. And, you know, it just makes me think about, you know, there's obviously always going to be haters be like, yeah, well, you were too high on Bateman and it was stupid stuff. But it makes me think of the, you know, his kind of like Twitter outburst when, you know, Eric DaCosta sort of flamed the receivers at the combine, and the NFLPA report about how the Ravens have like the worst training staff in the NFL. They got an F- and that's the strength and conditioning thing. And it makes you think, and all these other like former Ravens were like, yeah, that place ruined my career. that strength and conditioning like ruined my career. So if that does happen to Bateman, that will be very sad. But in a hypothetical world, if he comes back and he's fully healthy, man, I still have all the faith in the world in that guy. I think he's a legit baller.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
It's Reception Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
Okay, so another young wide receiver that we talked about last week, and literally as we spoke, we were trying to convince the Jets through mental telepathy that, hey, you got to hold on to Elijah Moore. He's this young up-and-coming, could be an absolute stud. Yeah, and then 24 hours later, the guy's traded to the Cleveland Browns. And this is the thing, too. You talk about the Browns making some savvy moves here. I mean, first of all, you think about the trade they made for Amari Cooper. They gave up absolutely nothing. And then for this one, too, for Elijah Moore, I mean, okay, yeah, they're swapping second and third round picks, but I don't think they gave up very much at all to go get Elijah Moore. I thought this was an awesome trade for Cleveland. You give Elijah Moore, again, this young, up-and-coming player, room to operate in a team that is in need of a number two wide receiver, potentially number one wide receiver, really, if you want to talk about Amari Cooper. But just Cooper and Elijah Moore there with Cleveland, with Deshaun Watson now, you know, trying to get back in shape too. I tell you what, he makes Cleveland's passing attack way more interesting.
Yeah, way more interesting. And I think Cleveland's passing attack will be way more interesting overall. There's been a lot of whispers in the offseason that they want to open this thing up. Like, they want to make this more of a passing offense than it has been in Cleveland recently. That makes sense too, because really, I kind of do, because I do really like Kevin Stefanski as an offensive designer and as a play caller. And I think they've played to their strengths recently, which their running back room has been like absurdly deep, and it's just not anymore. Like, D'Ernest Johnson's gone, Kareem Hunt's gone. He's still out there in free agency. Maybe they bring him back, but that would be, you know, possible. But either way, like, he wasn't very good last year anyways. And, you know, Nick Chubb at this point, like, he's the only guy in the backfield. But if Deshaun Watson is able, that's the big if, right? Like, and I don't give Deshaun Watson like the benefit of the doubt for this or anything, or like, oh, let's be sensitive to Watson, because this was a problem that he created. If he didn't have the full offseason with the team last year, he obviously was suspended, right? A lot of off-field stuff going on. So maybe in Cleveland's mind, they're like, all right, full offseason with the team, the legal stuff's behind him, theoretically. He'll be better this year. And if he's better this year, then yeah, now all of a sudden they have the horses to really open this thing up, because I've kind of thought all offseason that Cleveland was sneaky, one of the best receiver landing spots out there, because they needed a number two receiver. Like, we talked about DPJ at some point during the season. I think he's a fine three, but he's like just a guy. And he'll maybe stretch the field out for you a little bit, but Elijah Moore is exactly the type of player they need, a guy to get open, potentially to play in the slot, but can also play outside. Like, I think this is a huge win for Elijah Moore to come. I would have been great to see him with the Green Bay Packers for sure, but with the Green Bay Packers former quarterback Aaron Rodgers, slip of the tongue there. If Watson rebounds, I think this is a great spot for Elijah Moore, who, it sounds like, from what I heard, that the Jets weren't planning on trading Elijah Moore, but then they started getting a bunch of calls when they signed Mecole Hardman and they signed Alan Lazard, and team, that was really what kind of ended up moving the situation forward. So I think it's a pretty big win for Elijah Moore going from New York to Cleveland.
All right. So I want to wrap up the Cleveland thing, and then I'll get into the Jets here, Jets side of things. But listen, they've got a good offensive line. You talk about Stefanski maybe trying to open it up a little bit, and I'm very skeptical, because at what point in Stefanski's NFL career have we ever really seen that, right? When he was the offensive coordinator with Minnesota, they ran the ball. Now, you could say, okay, that was Zimmer. Zimmer had an identity. He wanted to run the ball, play good defense. I buy that. Okay. And then in Cleveland, you say, well, they didn't really have a quarterback and they're going to have to run that ball. I can buy that too. I'm just saying, there was never a point in Stefanski's, offensive play calling history in the NFL, have they ever, quote unquote, opened it up? And I will also say, I think he, Kyle Shanahan, and Sean McVay have the best offensive run systems in the NFL. First of all, they're all very similar, right? They're all based on this whole primarily outside zone run concepts. But regardless, whether we're talking power, power football, where we're talking finesse football, it doesn't matter. They've got run plays out the yin yang, man. And I love what Kevin Stefanski has done in the run game there in Cleveland, what he did in the run game there in Minnesota. So that's his bread and butter. I have real doubts that they quote unquote open it up. But can I also say this though? And I'm not here to give you the whole boomer idea of you got to establish the run, but I will say that when you have good balance and the threat of a good run game, certainly things can open up in the passing game as well. So I'm not saying establish the run. I'm just saying when you know you're playing a Kevin Stefanski team, Matt, you know you're going to get a good run game. And defensive coordinators on the other sideline, they've got to prepare.
Yeah, I don't think they're about to become like top five in the NFL in pass attempts or anything like that. But I think from where they've been from a design perspective, even like right. The last 2 years of Baker Mayfield. How about Baker Mayfield's good year in Cleveland under Stefan Stefanski in 2020? It was pretty clear. Like it was keep the train on the tracks, keep the train on the tracks. Like we just got to keep Baker in this little box. And as long as he's in this little box, he won't screw this up. And even Jacoby Brissett, as I have talked really, you know, highly about Jacoby Brissett, how he played last year, that was very much like a game manager heavy offense. So I'm not even necessarily saying from a volume perspective, they'll be like top five, but I think they could be a more aggressive passing team from a design perspective and maybe a volume perspective than they have been of late.
Yeah. By the way, beyond even Amari Cooper and now Elijah Moore, David Njoku had a real breakout season last year. I love this young kid, Harrison Bryant, too, another tight end. So, man, I tell you what, they do have some really interesting athletic now pass catchers there in Cleveland. And again, that offensive line, I think, still really rock solid, too. So this is a unit that could really make some noise.
And just the Elijah Morthe trade too. It's like I think the Browns were going to have to draft a receiver this year because they weren't necessarily going to make like the Hopkins trade or something like that.
Right.
I think ranking like if Elijah Moore was in this draft class, like him as a prospect, and I really my opinion on him hasn't really changed since he came into the NFL. I know he had a weird year last year. We kind of talked throughout in the last podcast. Yeah, I think he'd be the second best receiver in this class behind Jaxon Smith-Njigba. So like it's just a great trade from a value perspective there.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And they really didn't give up that much. Again, they gave up a second round pick, but then they're getting a third round pick back. Right.
Yeah.
So, I tell you, man, I thought it was a great trade, for Cleveland. I thought they absolutely hit an absolute home run. Bringing in Elijah Moore. Okay, now on the other side, though, for the Jets, it's like when I saw the Mecole Hardman signing, I just kind of figured Elijah Moore's out of there. And to me, Matt, I don't know, man. Like the Jets got to do some self-scouting or something, bro. Like, come on, man. Like you can't look at – you can't be like, all right, well, we got Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore. We should be cooking. And then you're like, all right, well, you know what? We're going to then bring in Al Lazard and Mecole Hardman. We're good. Like, what? Come on, guys. Like, what are we doing out here? Come on. That's not good. That is not good. I'm sorry, but that's just not good scouting, man. Like, what is happening? Like, give me Elijah Moore ahead of both of those guys any day of the week. I just don't understand, you know? Like, I really, Matt, do not understand why you bring in Hardman and you feel as if that makes Elijah Moore expendable. It just drives me nuts. I cannot understand it.
I think what the Jets wanted was they did see value in getting the other second round pick because that's going to be part of the Rodgers trade. It sounds like what's going to happen is they're going to send a second round pick this year and a second round pick next year, but they want that second round pick to have some assurances from the, like not assurances, but some like baked in protection that if Rodgers, this was Charles Robinson reported this from Yahoo. And that's the kind of the sticking point right now is they want some protection from the Packers that if Rodgers just goes back to being 90% retired this time next year, they get a little bit back. They don't have to give a full second next year. But anyways, they wanted the extra second round pick. I think it's part of the Rodgers stuff. But yeah, from a just brass tack standpoint, their receiver room is Garrett Wilson and a bunch of Jags right now. Because Corey Davis is a good player, but is he? I could see him either being part of the Packers trade. I could see him being cut. I could see him being traded to another team. Hard to see him on this roster. So then and Mecole Hardman is like not a real receiver. He's like a gadget guy. Like Elijah Moore is a real big boy wide receiver, despite like being a slot guy and smaller, like Mecole Hardman slot and small, whatever, but they're just not similar players. So, hey, I'll tell you what though, at this point, this is going to be like Garrett Wilson's going to get like 150 targets from Aaron Rodgers next year, which in the long run, probably a good thing.
Hey, listen, I'm happy for Garrett Wilson dynasty managers, fine. Okay, but again, this podcast and this show in particular, we kind of sort of blur that line between real football and the fake stuff, right? So, and I get it. So, listen, if you've got Garrett Wilson in dynasty and you want to draft him early next year, I'm all for it, man. Like, trust me, I'm going to have Garrett Wilson as a potential, superstar. When I start doing rankings into 2023. But from a real football standpoint, Matt, I'm just so disappointed, man. Like,
me too, yeah.
The Jets had a real, real opportunity to have a special passing attack. And to be frank, I mean, look, if the running backs come back and like, if they're as good as we think they can be, the run game would have been real solid too. So this Jets offense had a real chance to be special in 2023. You take Elijah Moore off, and now they're back to being just another NFL team trying to get by with one great receiver and then trying to figure out the holes everywhere else. And so, again, they go from having a real strength, Matt, to then just being another NFL team. And that's what makes me... I was disappointed in it.
Definitely disappointed. And I think the Jets are disappointed with the way this played out too. Like, I listened to Robert Saleh talk, and he's always been really complimentary of Elijah Moore. And I think he said, like, we kind of have to see, like, on our end, like, why this fell apart with a guy that even after the trade happened, he's like, this is a good player. And it was disappointing to lose him. So I think they definitely have to. And look, I've always said too, I love Elijah Moore, the player, but I don't love how he handled things last year. And I think that was a big part of it. But from just a pure football perspective too, like, I think the Jets are counting on, hey, our defense is going to be as good as it was last year. Our run game is going to be as good as it was last year when Breece Hall was healthy. And we're going to plop Aaron Rodgers in here, and he's going to basically be like, just like it was with the Packers in those two NFC championship runs where they had one alpha receiver and then a bunch of dudes like moving along with him. But it's tough to count on because defense doesn't always translate year to year.
Nope.
Breece Hall's coming off of an injury. Even if it's it's not a Javonte Williams or J.K. Dobbins type of knee injury, it's still a ACL recovery. Your offensive line, you got to get some guys back after injury. And that was Aaron Rodgers 2 and 3 years ago. And I don't think Rodgers is washed at all, but I also don't think I think from a physical standpoint, he's not as good as he was a couple of years ago. So there's a lot of things that they're counting on to just plop Rodgers in. And maybe we're not a very big voluminous passing attack. We have one alpha and a bunch of Jags, but our run game's gonna be good enough. Our defense is gonna be good enough. And sometimes that doesn't carry over year. So it is a risk what the Jets are playing with right now.
I think what the Jets are doing too, it's like you think about that. And again, that leaves I talk about this all the time in the NFL. You want to have the biggest margin for error possible in the NFL, because in the NFL, man, things go awry and they go sideways quick. So everything that you just listed out on paper sounds great until one injury hits, then another injury hits. Some guys, maybe it's not an injury. Maybe there's a depreciation of talent here. Okay. Like, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And all of a sudden, that margin for error shrinks considerably. Because again, when you have Elijah Moore in the mix, and people are saying, well, why do you guys think Elijah Moore's not a superstar? I get it. He's not a superstar. But you want to have as much talent buffer as possible in the very ultra-competitive AFC. And that margin for error all of a sudden shrunk down considerably when you send a young and ascending talent to Cleveland. That's all I'm saying. And I tell you what, could it all work out? Absolutely. But I tell you, don't be surprised if it doesn't. Don't be surprised if it falls apart, because again, that margin for error shrunk down considerably, man. So that would be my thought on Elijah Moore and the Jets, and then now Elijah Moore in Cleveland. And again, I think Cleveland making a great trade there.
Hey everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Reception Perception, the show. Now, James Coe and Matt Harmon.
All right, speaking of wide receiver signings, how about DJ Chark signing there in Carolina? Matt, I'm going to be 100% honest with you. This is when you sign Adam Thielen and then you go and sign DJ Chark. It's one of those things where, like, I know that the fan base is probably going to get a little bit excited, but this is like one of those classic moves or a classic pair of moves where on paper you're like, oh, Carolina improved their wide receiver room. And then in real life you realize, oh, Adam Thielen's old and DJ Chark is injured and not good. And all of a sudden everything falls apart. So I've just seen this story too often. Am I wrong?
Well, about DJ Chark, I mean, and Adam Thielen, you got to remember that after they traded DJ Moore, which I know it sucks to lose DJ Moore, but at the end of the day, it's a trade you have to make, because you can have DJ Moore and a bad quarterback play and you're the 2019, 2020, 2021 and 2022 Panthers. That was not fun. So if you've got to part with DJ Moore to get up to number one overall to take, I still hope it's CJ Stroud. You do that.
Yeah.
But the receiver room that was left after that was a disaster. I mean, it was like, it's Terrace Marshall, who's been one of the worst reception perception performers in the last two seasons. It's Laviska Shenault, who's not a real wide receiver. It's Shy Smith, who's like a bottom of the roster player. I mean, that's like, hey, that's not good. So if you're paying, I think they paid Thielen a lot of money. I don't think DJ Chark's, I think it's 2019 season, you know, just looking at his success rate versus man coverage, the last 3 years or the last 4 years of his career, 2019, 69%, 2020, 59.1%, 2021, 50%. You don't want to be below 50%. Okay. You don't want to be around that 50% mark, just to be super, super clear. And then last year in Detroit, he's right around there, 51.6%. The separation ability is definitely gone down for him considerably. You know, people talking about, hey, he ran a 4.3 coming in the league. Who cares? He's had he's sustained a ton of lower body injuries.
Correct.
He's Frank Reich even said this week that he just underwent like an ankle procedure. Ankles things have been haunting him forever. I mean, he just doesn't get open. He wins downfield, but it's all like jump ball stuff at this point.
Yep.
Which is a great trait. He's a very good ball winner downfield, tracks the ball well, wins in contested situations, but not a separator. That being said, like, he's a passable number three receiver in the league. Adam Thielen's probably a passable starting receiver in the league. You're better than you were. You can't drop CJ Stroud into a Terrace Marshall, Laviska Shenault receiver core. It looks a little bit better when it's like, okay, Adam Thielen, you know, a veteran zone beating player, and DJ Chark, like a jump ball specialist downfield. It looks a little bit better when you're talking about that.
36.8% of his routes, according to your charting, was downfield, the corner nine and post routes there in 2022 for the Detroit Football Lions. Not all that successful, 41.9% success rate on the nines, 58.6% success rate on the post. That's actually not too bad. But a 26.3% success rate on the corner, that's not very good at all. Going back, digging into some more of your RP data here, though. Look, I get it. Like a lot of his, again, we talked about more than a third of his routes, almost nearly 40% of his routes are going downfield. But fifth percentile score against man, that's not good. And then, am I reading this right? A first percentile score against zone. Yes.
Yep.
First. Yep. Oh boy. That's not
ideal. Not good. But again, like the guy he's probably replacing, Terrace Marshall, probably that and like a little worse based on his first.
Are we sure he's replacing Terrace Marshall?
Well, I mean, it depends on what they do in the draft. I also think, by the way, like, DJ Chark's on a 1-year deal. I know they tacked like a bunch of void years and stuff on it, like they can, you know, signing bonus, all that stuff.
It's
like,
a 1-year deal.
I think there's a chance that, hey, if DJ Chark comes into camp and like all this offseason stuff, like he's hurt again, like, yeah, they just, I think it's either going to be him or Terrace Marshall in that X receiver role that is mostly a jump ball guy, mostly a crossing route guy, mostly running deep routes. And Adam Thielen will be like your zone beating flanker. Maybe he plays some big slot. But I also think like a 39th overall, there's a lot of options for them in terms of like a guy that can get separation. Yeah. You know, and they still have a second round pick despite this big number one overall trade up. So I just think that DJ Chark and Adam Thielen's about getting like competent NFL players, flawed players for sure. with Thielen and especially with Chark, but and maybe Marshall gets into the mix here, but yeah, I just think it's about getting competent guys around, you know, the NFL, like the number one overall pick in the NFL draft.
Hey, okay. So if you're new to the show, I know your feelings on Terrace Marshall, but I'll ask you this question again. I've asked you this question before. Maybe you revisited this idea. I don't know. Terrace Marshall, is there a path for him, to tap into that? His, again, you look at his athletic measurements and boy, I tell you, great athlete, can't translate into route running and the nuances of playing football, but is there a path forward for him to kind of tap into that athletic prowess?
And I liked Terrace Marshall a little bit as like a second round pick in the NFL draft the year that he came in.
I love
so him. Yeah. And we liked his ability. If you go back and look at his route charts from the prospect data that year, and you know, I was like, in terms of these guys that I said, I've stacked the last three classes together, he still comes out at like 22nd in terms of ranking the classes together the last 3 years. So not like a stud prospect or anything, but I didn't think he'd be this bad, but there was definitely signs of like, he needed to have work as a route runner, but he was really good on slants and go routes, as a collegiate prospect, which is why we thought he'd fit better in the X receiver role, which he had some moments in last year, not that slot receiver role, that he was playing last year. But I'll read what I wrote on the in-season tracker for Terrace Marshall last year. Marshall checked in as a rookie with one of the worst RP profiles ever charted. A role change in 2022 has helped him a bit. Marshall played a ton of slot receiver as a rookie, but is almost exclusively operated as a vertical outside X receiver option this season, taking 92.4% of his snaps outside and on the line of scrimmage for 84% in this sample. His overall success rates are still very poor at 40.7% versus man coverage and 64.5% versus zone. 40.7%, by the way, James, is lower than DJ Chark. He quite literally only wins on slant routes at 80% and nine routes at 58.8%. I have a bit more hope for Marshall in this role than his previous rookie year spot. However, I still think if he sticks, he lands somewhere on the lower end of the Devontae Parker access of wide receivers. So Parker, Chark, Terrace Marshall, this is all the same bucket of like throwback X receiver that doesn't get open but wins like jump balls. So I don't know if you want to call that hope. I probably wouldn't, but maybe he could fall somewhere on the axis of receivers.
I'll ask a follow-up question to that. You've got all that data in front of you. You've charted hundreds of guys. How often or how rare is it to see a guy? And look, I know you get tired of this comp all the time, but Davante Adams, you charted his rookie year and wasn't good at all. I think I'm correct in saying that.
You are correct. Yep.
And obviously he developed into quite literally the absolute poster child of reception percent, like the best route runner you could find in the NFL. I know it's rare, but how rare is it? And you know, again, I don't want to make comparisons between freaking Davante Adams and you know, Terrace Marshall, for God's sake. So I'm just trying to get a sense of, okay, how rare is it? And again, if you're trying to look for a little bit of silver lining, a little bit of hope or something with Terrace Marshall, you know, that would be what you gravitate towards. You know, I know it's more anecdotal than it is data driven, but again, just from what you've kind of sort of seen around the NFL and the guys that you've charted, how rare is that to actually happen?
Extremely rare. I actually think that what's helpful to look at, like, the bottom 10 of reception perception success rate versus man coverage finishers. And we can throw out rookie year Cooper Kupp, because he was incredible against zone coverage and he's a slot player, so who cares about that? Right. But Justin Hunter, 31.9%. Terrace Marshall, 39.5% in their rookie. Well, I think it was Justin Hunter's second year in 2014. Terrace Marshall's obviously his rookie year. Jalen Reagor is at the bottom there at 40.8%. Devontae Parker's rookie season at 42.9%. Marquise Lee's rookie season at 44.1%. And then you get to Davante Adams there at 47%, his rookie year. The next guy on the list, though, is like, it's Devin Funchess at 47.5% in his rookie year. So, like, I think that kind of paints how unlikely it is that you're suddenly going to become, you know, the next, like, Davante Adams. Like, they're obviously, but I think the Reagor, Hunter group is like the total flameouts, you know, like that's within the range of outcomes. Like, oh, this guy's just like not really an NFL player. Although Reagor like might be able to stick as a fourth receiver special teamer, but regardless, like not really an offense, like not a guy that's going to contribute on offense in the NFL. But I think like Devontae Parker is a good example of a guy who's like, he could give you some years, but Parker is like I don't even think an average starting NFL receiver. I think he's like, a below average X receiver that shouldn't really be like a big part of your passing game. Very much like DJ Chark, by the way, you know, who's 2021 season's kind of near this range. I also think like Marquise Lee's a guy that he washed out of the NFL, but he had one decent season. So I think that's sort of like, there's the range there. The extremely unlikely is that they become the best receiver in football in Davante Adams. The more likely is that they either wash out of the league or give you a couple like random decent years, like I think Parker and Marquise Lee to a lesser extent did. And then obviously Devin Funchess, even he had like one relatively okay year.
Playing with an MVP quarterback in Cam Newton, right? But so barring that, you know, but I will say though, I really like the comp with Devontae Parker, to be honest with you. I feel like that's they have similar bodies, similar athleticism, similar skill sets. The Marquise Lee one was a little bit, again, a lot of those guys that you mentioned are undersized and or bad athletes, right? So like Devin Funchess, for example, was a tall guy, but I mean, again, he was like two cheeseburgers away from playing tight end. You know what I mean?
He did eventually play. Lions sign him as a tight end? Hey, Sammy Watkins is also on this list too, 49.5%, which I think people would find surprising. But like Sammy Watkins has had, even in reception perception, not just raw stats, has had one good year, like 1 year above 64% success rate versus man, 0 years above 77% success rate versus zone. Like, he's always been a really inconsistent, I think ultimately very disappointing NFL player. But, you know, another guy that like that I think we'd say is belongs in this group of guys who in their first years really struggled to beat man coverage and were outside receivers.
All right. So there you go. Yeah, I really, really like that. I think Sammy Watkins is probably a good, decent comp too. But I think the Devontae Parker one, that one really hits home for me. So if Terrace Marshall can end up being Devontae Parker, and I know you're saying, oh, well, you know, he'd be better served as a number three. I mean, hey, listen, Devontae Parker has stuck around the NFL for quite a while. you know what I mean? So I think Terrace Marshall, if he can find that, level of success. I think that'd be a win. I think that would be an
huge win
for him. Just, I mean, even professionally and financially. I mean, Parker's made a little bit of coin, dude. You know, that's not bad.
Yeah. Parker obviously was like a first round draft pick where Marshall was a second rounder. But yeah, for sure. I think that would be a huge win for the Panthers too. Like, again, I think people are we're talking about DJ Chark right now because his signing just happened, but
yeah.
And I'm not even like a big Terrace Marshall fan. I'm just saying that like these guys are on the same axis of wide receivers, and if Marshall outplays Chark this year, I wouldn't be shocked. So, yeah.
All right, there you go. Okay, so next week, it's the big week, right? Because people go crazy for this stuff, man. But prospects in 2023, we're talking wide receiver prospects. We're going to talk about Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, Zay Flowers, and Jalen Hyatt. Next week, I'm teasing here a little bit, but I want to throw a little chum, you know, into the waters, get the sharks ready, man. I want to talk about Josh Downs, there from North Carolina. Those other guys, Matt, they're, you know, again, highly regarded prospects in this year's draft class. I know this year's draft class, not necessarily doesn't have like the stars or whatever it is, but Josh Downs is one of these guys that, is an intriguing prospect. I don't know a ton about Josh Downs. Hey, listen, you got to forgive me here. I didn't watch a lot of North Carolina football. Okay, so
you're not a Drake May, bro. I mean, come on, dude.
Nah, man. I saw him play about one game, and I was like, I get why people are excited. And I'm like, nope, I'm good. But I did not see a lot of Josh Downs.
Fair enough.
Football. But what can you tell me? I know you haven't gotten the full sample in yet on Josh yeah. Downs, but what have you seen thus far on the kid out of North Carolina?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about him because I was tweeting about him today. Shout out to our friends at Bud Light. We're engaging with the tweet too.
There you go. You know,
so sponsor the pod already, Bud Light. What are we doing?
Come on, let's go.
Yeah, seriously, give us the Bud Light bag. I mean, they've already, never mind. Anyway, point is, I was saying that I was like, I will buy a ton of beer for anybody who can get me some more Josh Downs all 22, because I've only got three games in. I'm trying to get some more and I want to get some more because those three games are really fun. And it's fresh in my mind because it was what I was working on before we got on the pod here. Ah, man, this guy's going to be like my favorite second round prospect in this draft. Wow. For sure, because he just, God, I love players like this, the guys that just know how to get open. And that's this dude. I mean, he is so just electric as a separator, as a route runner. He's mostly a slot receiver. Mm-hmm. Get ready for that. There's a lot of slot receivers in this draft class.
Oh my God. There's so many.
And by the way, it's a lot of small slots. And the one dude who's like a big wide receiver, Quentin Johnston, might play smaller than all of them, but we'll talk about that on the next episode. Josh Downs, again, the three games I have right now, 72.3% success or 72.3% slot rate. But just a 78.2% success rate versus man, 84% success rate versus zone. I think the more games that get in the sample, the more those numbers will go down. But that's an awesome start for a three-game sample here. Really knows how to beat coverage at all three levels. I think especially, you know, routes like the dig, routes like the slant. But really, you see him win on some outbreaking routes as well. I think he can really be a big time separator on the inside. I don't know that he's like 171 pounds, you know, I don't know that he's ever going to be like an outside receiver at that size, but I mean, we're talking about a league that plays a ton of 11 personnel. If you're in the second round and you're looking for a guy, like, I mean, hey, the Panthers, I think they'd be a great fit with the Carolina Panthers because they need someone to potentially get open after all those guys we just talked about earlier. Maybe are not separators. You know, CJ Stroud made a lot of big plays with Jaxon Smith-Njigba as a slot receiver.
Right.
He'd be a fun fit with CJ Stroud there. So yeah, I mean, Josh Downs is a guy that the more I see, the more I like. I think in terms of second round prospects, he's one of my favorites right now.
Okay. So I'll give you a little bit of pushback, right? Because again, I haven't watched a lot of Josh Downs, but I know what a lot of people are going to say, which is this guy's 5'10". He's 170 pounds. He's 175 pounds soaking wet. He's probably going to play around 170 pounds. And again, he ran a 4.48, which is, it's not great. You know, like when you're that size, man, you got to break that 4.5 barrier, right? So like 4.48 is not good. So he's a below, it is very fair to say he's a below average athlete overall. Now, what little I have seen of Josh Downs, freaking great route runner though. Good Lord. Yeah. Like the guy absolutely has got the choppy feet. He's got the swivel hips, man. Like he's fluid, he's smooth. So he plays, I get it. He plays faster than his overall speed. But I think it is also fair to say, and this is where the pushback comes in, which is athleticism does matter in the NFL though, man. And so I just wonder how much do you think that will, you know, slow him down, if at all?
I know that he smoked his three cone and was incredible at his pro day. And I think that's more of his game. He's not a long speed guy. He's not necessarily going to beat you over the top. Although he does win at the catch point. He's a tough contested catch receiver, which I think is going to be pretty surprising when people see that part of him. But I do think he kind of reminds me maybe, and this is definitely a weight based comp. I think like from a Marquise Brown perspective, he could be that type of player. I think that's probably a fair comp for him. Another guy that I know that, of course, you know, Marquise Brown weighed in like 166, when he was coming off an injury at his combine. He probably plays closer to that, like 170, 175 range, maybe even 180, you know, maybe Josh Downs could get up to 180 at some point. But, and I know that like Marquise Brown might not excite people, but for some reason, Marquise Brown's like the most disrespected receiver in the NFL. I saw the NFL official NFL okay. account posted a graphic like who has the best wide receiver from the 2019 class, and they included DK Metcalf, Terry McLaurin, AJ Brown, Deebo Samuel, Deontay Johnson, and then Hunter fucking Renfro over Marquise Brown. Like Marquise Brown was the first round, he was the first pick in that draft, and like you're putting Hunter Renfro on this graphic over Marquise Brown, who's like
wow
had 1,000 yards before, was good in Arizona last year, over a guy. It's compared to a guy who couldn't beat out Mac Collins for a starting spot last year. Give me a break. Marquise Brown, I think if that's who Josh Downs ends up being, I think it would be a pretty good comp for him. And I think, you know, from a zone beating perspective, 84% for Josh Downs in this 3-game sample, that's pretty similar to like Marquise Brown's biggest strengths as well.
That's interesting, man. So, I think he's certainly an interesting prospect. Again, you love what you see on the game tape, the highlights and all that kind of stuff. It's just his measurables, man. Oh my gosh. I did not realize he was so small.
He's really small. I didn't think he was going to be that small either. That was surprising to me.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, when I saw some of the clips on him, I'm like, oh, okay. He looks great, you know, but again, when you measure in that light, man, oh my gosh. And by the way, I mean, come on, man, like, you know, he bulked up for that. Right? So it's like, you know, he bulked up. That's as big as he's going to be. That's as fast as he's going to be, man. And you know, these things about Josh Downs out of North Carolina, man. So I am a little bit concerned there, obviously. As that is my, you know, part of my brand, I guess, is like looking at these kind of things and figuring that out. But to your point though, Matt, I was very actually pleasantly surprised, by his separation. And I can absolutely see why he's going to be a Matt Harmon guy, but yeah, interesting dude, right? In terms of his draft capital, where he goes. And I think his landing spot is going to be hugely important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I like that Carolina suggestion, 39th overall. I think that's sort of the range he's going to live in, is like maybe that second round range, but just because, yeah, the measurables aren't there, but the gameplay really is. And you know, this is a league where you need three good receivers. And if you need somebody to get open, I think Josh Downs is going to be that guy.
All right, there you go. Okay. So, that is Josh Downs from North Carolina, intriguing prospect, in the mind of Matt Harmon, but, the big boys, in this draft class, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, and Zay Flowers. I think it's fair to say those are your big four. Jalen Hyatt out of Tennessee, also an interesting prospect too, but I think those four guys that I mentioned there, JSN, Addison, Johnston, and Flowers, I think those guys have a real chance going somewhere in the first round. One of those dudes probably going to go in the top 15 picks, and then, you know, there'll be some other guys that will also flirt in that first round. But don't give it to them yet, Matt. But in next week's episode, Matt is going to break down his thoughts on all of these guys going into the draft, where he would like to see them end up, and what is the axis of player? What buckets, as he says, what bucket of player do these guys fit into? and what are the skills that they possess that could potentially turn them into stars in the NFL. All right, so, but that's it for our show for this week. But again, if this is your first time listening to us, man, like and subscribe to the podcast, man, that would be very much appreciated. And of course, go check out the website, receptionperception.com. All right, for Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you.